Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive minute by minute into the cinematic universe of Hank Ferbert.
Why don't you give that another go, bud?
Hank Ferbert.
I guess we know what's going ahead of this episode.
You can't do too many cold opens.
Oh, I can do as many as I want. Okay.
Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive minute by minute into the cinematic universe of Frank Herbert's Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
And today we're talking about the rest of the conversation that Paul and Leto Atreides are having on the cliffside cemetery. And we're going to be finishing the episode up with a little bit of a knife fight.
Oh, yes.
So at the end of last episode, we were talking about how that moment between Paul and Leto is the most, like, probably touching moment that we have in this movie and the most humanizing moment for the Atreides. The conversation ends literally in the last couple, or in the first couple seconds of this minute, where Leto and Paul are both looking out over the graveyard, and Leto says to Paul, you know, I've found my own way to it, being, you know, the responsibilities of, you know, being the Duke of Caladan. Maybe you'll find yours. In their memory, give it a try. And I think that goes back to what you were talking about at the end of the episode, where it's like, it's not really a choice. It's just like, fucking, you know, try it out.
Yep.
And yeah, okay. So I have a note on here. I did some counting when I was watching. There are 28 tombs above ground, plus the one for the old Duke that Leto was, you know, crouched over and everything. So
caressing.
Yeah. So caressing sounds weird. I would say he's cleaning it up.
Hey man, I'm not gonna king shame or anything, dude. That's what he likes. Is what he likes. It is strange, but hey, maybe he's into it. Who knows? So 29 tombs.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a lot of dead people.
Yeah. Average lifespans, 100 plus years, 2,900 years. I mean, I know they're not all back to back, but yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, do you have the encyclopedia with that list of all of the?
I don't want to get it.
The point is that not all of them lived natural lives either. Like, sure. Clearly the old Duke was killed bullfighting as well. So,
right.
Anyways, it's a lot of dead people. That's the point.
Oh, for sure. So after this conversation, we get a nice sweeping landscape shot, and then we get to the interior of Castle Caladan.
Well, we get that sweeping landscape shot, and one thing that I noticed is, like, I wouldn't even call it really a castle. It almost looks more like a big ass Italian villa kind of thing.
Yeah, I thought about this. I was like, that can't be the whole thing.
I don't know. It's still fucking huge.
Sure, but it's described as like a legit castle in the books, so maybe this is like maybe this is the guest house. You know, just a couple buildings they have,
maybe. Or it was maybe just, you know, creative decisions that were made by the production crew or whatever to make it a little more wide, and like it definitely seems more like naturally fitting into the land than them just like leveling out a whole flat space to just like build this ornate ass castle into and everything.
Right.
Like,
right.
Like, I don't know if you noticed, but so there's the lighthouse down at the tip of a peninsula that's in front of the castle. But then like off to the side on an inlet, they have like a bunch of boating docks and stuff like that. So it's like they're building into the nature around them.
That makes sense.
A lot of rounded edges and circular designs in this castle.
Okay. Kind of fits the landscape.
Yeah.
All right. I dig it. But yeah, as we go inside, we get a cut to Paul practicing with some swords, some kinjals, as they're called. And then we hear a voice from Gurney Halleck saying, "Don't stand with your back to the door."
Well, we hear some footsteps.
We hear some
heavy footsteps.
We hear some heavy footsteps.
But yes, Gurney is clearly not having any of Paul's shit here, because you can tell he's told Paul many times to, you know, not leave his back exposed.
Yeah, and Gurney's just overall a very surly man.
Perfect casting for Josh Brolin.
I will talk a little bit about the casting here in a second, or at least about Book Gurney and how Book Gurney measures up to movie Gurney.
Well, don't just, you know, tease us here.
Well,
just,
hang on. I want to talk a smidge about this. You know, they could imitate my strides. That's an odd thing to say.
Yeah.
Like that. That's just a very odd thing to say. But it made me think, okay, why, you know, let's put it into context. Mm-hmm. Why in this universe would that be something that they would be concerned about? And it made me remember in later books, we don't see it any in this movie, but it is referenced a little bit in this part of the book, or in the first book. There's this these things in the Dune universe called face dancers.
Okay.
And they are basically genetically modified humans that can take on the shape and appearance of just about anyone. So they have they're described as having ultimate control over every single muscle, and they can alter their appearance and bone structure and stuff. It's very sci-fi. It's a super, super sci-fi thing. But that would be a very reasonable thing that would imitate someone's stride. If they can, you know, put themselves into the body shape and, you know, the physicality of Gurney Halleck, sure, they would imitate the stride.
Sure. But to Paul's point, where how he says, you know, I would be able to know the difference. If I took you right now and put you into my body, you would not know what the fuck. Like, you would kind of know what you're doing, but your center of gravity and my center of gravity are still off and different. True. And there is a little bit of, there still would be a little bit of a learning period.
Sure, sure. These face dancers are trained to do this. Like, that okay. is, they're like,
that is the only thing that they fucking do. Got
that
it.
That is, they're trained to infiltrate, to mimic and infiltrate. The point that I wanted to get across is like, okay, it sounded like a weird thing at first for him to say, like, yeah, they could imitate my stride, but then, you know, putting it into context is, oh, I forget that face dancers exist here. That makes more sense why he's worried about this.
Sure. But also just in the context of the movie, not knowing about face dancers or anything.
It's a very odd thing to say.
Yes and no. We know that this universe is not kind. And there are enemies of the Atreides, and we mm-hmm. know that Paul is the only son of Duke Leto Atreides. So
for now,
it does make him a target.
Yeah,
whether he is actively doing anything or not.
Yes. So Gurney's cautiousness and worry is incredibly founded. Like it's there's legitimate reasons for it.
I mean, like any good. I don't want to, you know, diminish Gurney to a security guard, but like any good person in security, he is a little paranoid about things that could happen.
Yep. Yep. Moving on a little bit from here. Did you catch it?
The glow globe.
We got a glow globe, John. We got a glow globe in the background.
We got several glow globes in this room, Zach.
Oh, yes,
there are no less than three.
Shout out to the real ones. Glow globes, putting in the work.
Love the glow globes. I have notes for every single glow globe.
Yeah, pretty me too. It's a beautiful,
in all caps, by the way.
It's a beautiful, beautifully wooded room. Mm-hmm. Love the wood paneling in the room and the wood floors and the big old wooden desk, and it's just great. Makes a lot of sense. I'm sure. This natural wood is super abundant on Caladan.
Yep.
So it makes sense that their rooms are built out of it. But it's still just a beautifully, beautifully decorated room.
So, I was doing a little bit of research and everything on the actual set designs and everything as well.
Yeah.
First of all, there's well over 100 people listed on IMDb for for various like objects and stuff of set design. But Dune production designer Patrice Vermette and set decorator Richard Roberts, which Richard Roberts just sounds like a comic book hero name. All of the work that they do for all of the sets is fantastic, but it's very cool to see the amount of detail. Like, so in the, when we were talking about the hangar where we meet Duncan Idaho and we see the hexagonal floors that are like slightly, you know, not entirely perfectly level or whatever, but tastefully on level. Conversely, here we see really nice, really ornate wood flooring where there's the vaulted ceiling, but the floor pattern matches that vaulting and everything.
Yep.
We get the big, almost looks like a sunrise kind of window.
Yeah, yeah. I thought upon my like second or third rewatch of this minute, I was looking at that vaulted part of the ceiling and I was like, that is, I wonder if that's like a callback to Lynch's Dune. Because in the training room in there, there is a vaulted ceiling that the trainer comes down from.
So I...
Did you put that in your notes?
Yes. Okay. Nice.
I don't have that in mind, but I remember thinking that as I was watching it.
I think this is a much... I think Gurney Halleck ends up being a much better trainer than the trainer from Lynch's Dune.
Hey,
but
hey, you do not talk ill about Patrick Stewart.
I'm not... No. I'm not talking ill about Patrick Stewart or Josh Brolin. I'm saying that they are better than the... weird robot trainer that just kind of
shakes
a little bit.
So speaking of Gurney Halleck, let's get into Gurney Halleck a little bit.
Yes, let's.
So I wrote a lot of notes about this, so I may leave some out. I may not. I don't know, but I got a good amount of backstory. Before you want to talk about the movie Brolin first?
Well, before you dive too deep in here, I could tell by your footsteps, Gurney Halleck, someone might imitate my stride. Mm-hmm. I'd know the difference. Are you the new weapons master?
Right.
So,
right.
Duncan Idaho at this point is gone.
Yep.
What is, and we kind of talked about it a little bit, how both Duncan and Gurney have that relationship with the Atreides that goes back a really long time.
Yeah.
So I guess like kind of recapping for what we've already talked about, what is the difference in terms of like, the Atreides military that Gurney Halleck, what are his duties versus Duncan's duties?
Yeah. So they're both described as just like war masters for the House Atreides.
Okay.
So I think they share a lot of duties in terms of like training troops and just getting their army up to snuff.
Okay.
Gurney is an exceptional fighter, which I'll talk about a little bit more here in just a second. And so is Duncan Idaho, obviously. So they've risen up into the ranks of like, you know, the highest rank of soldier. I guess they would be like generals in their army.
Sure.
You know? So yeah, I think there's a lot of overlap in what they cover. But the main tasks, you know, they are there for war strategy, training, and they work, you know, hand in hand with Thufir to really just handle any kind of militaristic planning. And coordination.
Got it. In my notes, I kind of equated it to like Gurney Halleck is more of that like cop or detective that's been on the force for like 30 years and he's like more old school and by the book kind of guy.
I'm getting too old for this shit.
Yeah. Whereas Duncan Idaho's more like fly by night, but also like still incredibly disciplined, but like a little more of a maverick.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, at least not in the things that I've read have come across like a stark difference between their duties. Mm-hmm. I think they share a lot of the same ones, but their title is just, you know, War Master, which is a cool title.
That's a fucking badass title.
Yeah, that's really nice. So Gurney Halleck. So this this is information pulled from the encyclopedia mostly. Although there are some book quotes sprinkled into these notes.
Hit me with them.
Yeah. In the books, this is probably the biggest difference, and I'm just getting it right out of the gate. In the books, he is described in this quote, a rolling, ugly man.
Jesus Christ.
With an ink vine scar on his face. So an ink vine scar, it's from a very special whip that leaves a purple a gash and scarring across the face. So he's described as a short, kind of stout, ugly man.
Jesus.
So points against Josh Brolin casting there. I understand
the makeup department could have just like fucked his face up.
Sure. But I would not describe Brolin as a
no.
rolling ugly man.
No. Does he have a furrowed brow often? Yes. Does he have a very like very strong jawline and a prominent chin? Yes, but I would not call him a rolling ugly man.
Absolutely not. Halleck's described as a master balisette player, so it's their equivalent to the guitar.
Okay.
In universe, and we don't see it in this movie. I believe there is a pretty prominent scene in Dune 2.
Part 2. Get it fucking
That's right. still years away for us. I'll get it by then, hopefully. Yeah, we do see him play the balisette in this part two of the movies.
We do see him carrying one in the Lynch film, though.
It's true.
And it's very odd.
Yes, very,
as,
very
odd. As are all things in that.
He's also described as a poet, which we do get to see in this movie. He's always got a quip or a one-liner, or he's quoting something, which is really cool. So he's like, he's an incredible fighter. But he's also a very, he's an artist, if essentially.
He's a warrior monk.
A warrior poet. Gurney Halleck is from the planet Chusook. And their main export was musical instruments. So it makes sense that he is a very, very skilled balisette player. Sometime in his youth, the Harkonnens attacked his home planet and killed everyone except for him and his sister. Okay. So he had a... you'll like this. So he had an older brother and a younger sister.
Okay.
His younger sister's name is Annette Halleck. Older brother named Kyle. Kyle Halleck.
I think
this is your Kevin Lannister this universe.
Frank Herbert was really just like, fuck, dinner's ready. I just got to come up with someone.
Well, I think Kyle was that's an encyclopedia edition.
Okay.
So blame them, not Herbert. The attack on his home planet was actually Beast Raban's first military action as like a ward of Baron Harkonnen. He wanted his first action to be something easy.
Sure.
it's a planet full of musicians, man. They're not going to fight.
Yeah.
Not going to fight back. So he
I don't know if they're all bards and they're running 5e rules, then they could be casting some magic and shit, but it's a D&D.
Okay. Yeah. You lost me on that one.
I really think you should like fucking
one pick day. Up D&D. I'm sure.
It's so up your alley.
Gurney Halleck and his sister Annette were the only ones who survived the raid by the Harkonnens out of the entire Halleck family. Gurney, since he was young and spry, was sent to the slave pits, and his sister, who in the books he does make a point to mention was very beautiful, was sent to the pleasure houses.
She was not a rolling ugly man.
No, she was not. Gurney spent 10 years in the slave pits on Gedi Prime, and where the average life expectancy was somewhere close to 5. It says in the encyclopedia that he was just fueled by pure hatred, for the Harkonnens, and that kept him alive. After about 9 years of doing whatever they do in the slave pits, he got a chance to encounter Raban again. And apparently Raban was like, "Hey man, you've been here for a real long time. What gives? What's the secret here?"
"I fucking hate you."
Yeah. And he just spits in his face.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Which is, as you can imagine, with the political structure like the Harkonnens have, that is easily a death sentence.
Sure.
But he kind of appreciates it a little bit. Like he appreciates the gumption.
Yeah. Okay.
Of doing that and just whips him. So the ink vine scar,
that's where,
you know, we get is courtesy of Beast Raban.
Is it Raban or Rabin?
I've always pronounced it Raban.
I've always pronounced it Rab.
Yeah, we can go back and forth.
Right. I mean, I also call
Harkonnen. Harkonnen.
No, it's always Harkonnen. I don't do the David Lynch pronunciation of Harkonnen or Lance Drad. I also bounce back and forth a lot between Leto and Leto.
Yeah.
And Leto. So fucking whatever.
We're getting really close to our data argument that we've had for a long time. So I'm going to steer us back into this.
Data is only.
Okay. No, we're not going to do it. No, not for this. Save that for a weekend episode. So after 10 years in the Slave Pits, the Atreides, I guess I should have mentioned earlier, Gurney's family was an ally of the Atreides.
Okay.
Which is why the Harkonnens wanted to specifically attack them. Because it is a way of attacking the Atreides without...
Without directly assaulting Caladan.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So after 10 years, the Atreides come and do a raid of the Slave Pits. Gurney is rescued. Leto notes how exceptional his fighting skills are. I mean, shit, he spent 10 years in the Slave Pits. Probably going to be a good fighter at this point. And
Leto or the old Duke?
This is Leto.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Leto. They're not too different in age.
Okay.
So this would have been when Leto is Duke. So he notices how good of a fighter he is and asks, you know, hey, do you want to join up with my crew? And Gurney says, yes, with one exception. Help me find my sister.
Okay.
Years later, so Leto says, yeah, well, yes, of course. Well, yes, of course, we'll do this. And years later, they figure out what happened to Annette. She was sent to a pleasure house.
Mm-hmm.
On her very first day of captivity, the very first Harkonnen soldier that visited her chambers, she tried to stab and then killed herself.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So
he never found out about this. So he only found out about it years and years later.
Sure.
But that drive kept him going.
That just reignited the fire of hatred.
Yes.
In Gurney Halleck's heart.
Yeah. So all of that to say, I think we should keep all of that in mind when we hear him say they're brutal.
Yeah.
Because that is why he absolutely knows they're brutal. He has lived
it. Why he despises the ever-loving shit out of the Harkonnen.
Yes, he has lived it. They've taken so much from him, and it just knowing that. I mean, you get a lot of that from his line delivery in the show. Like you get the passion.
Yeah.
But the backstory about knowing exactly his history with the Harkonnens is like, okay, no, he fucking gets it.
He has seen the worst of the worst in
what
the Harkonnens are capable of doing. Okay.
Yep.
Well, that makes a lot more sense, and that adds a lot of context that, frankly, I understand why they don't, like, do a flashback scene. You don't have time, and also, like, it would just be completely disjointed and everything.
It would have been a good, special feature.
Sure.
That would have been a good little spice morsel for them to sprinkle in.
A morsel of melange. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense as to why Paul is, like, I've had quite a day, Gurney. Give us a song instead.
Yep.
And I love that as Paul is saying that, you just see Gurney in the back. He's out of focus, but you see Gurney in the background just kind of like resign himself to just being like, this fucking little bitch. You see him just like heavy sigh, grabs a knife off the table and just fucking yeets it at Paul. And it's got the most satisfying like thud sound in the that vibrating blade sound still.
Have you ever tried knife throwing?
I've done axe throwing, but not knife throwing.
Okay. It is different. I've only like ever tried it like as a kid, like in my backyard. That throw that he does with the length of that blade is damn impressive. Like from that far away.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's a light.
No. And it's just like, phoosh, right there.
It's a straight line.
Yeah, incredibly impressive throw.
I'd also like to shout out the sound design team.
Sure.
IMDb credits over 50 people that have had their hands somehow involved with designing sound or recording or whatever.
Where am a Foley artist at? The real, yeah. Another real one behind the scenes, but they make everything great.
There were like 6 or 7 different people credited just with Foley.
Oh, I'm sure.
Which is crazy.
What a cool job.
Oh,
what a
cool job. How fucking cool would that be? Just, all right, I'm going to sit in this room, watch a movie, and make sounds all day.
I mean, I got to go walk on rice.
Foley is super cool.
Yeah. I love the...
That's rude.
That's rude.
That's rude. And then Paul turns around to see Gurney just charging him. And I just love... All right, so I love that Paul's like trying to evade him. And Gurney just smacks the ever-living shit out of Paul.
Oh, yeah.
And it's such a satisfying sound of like that, just like that good thud sound.
Oh, yeah.
And our minute ends with Gurney just like winding up, and he's ready. He's doing this thing where he's like kind of like flipping the knife in his hand, and Paul is looking fucking terrified.
My last note, Josh Brolin looking ripped for this role. Just not that he's not normally, but just bam,
he's yoked for this.
He's got some guns on him, man.
Yeah.
I think we got a lot of fighting coming up.
The next 2 minutes or so of this, the next 2 episodes are going to be a lot of fun. So.
All right, cool. Well, we'll see you next time on the Dune Minute, where we get to talk about Paul and Gurney's fight a little bit more.
Talk about a knife fight.
Knife fight.
All right. We'll see you guys later.
See you.